Blog Talk Radio.
This is the news in brief from the United Nations. The UN Food and Agriculture Organization, FAO, has warned that the destruction of the Kakhovka Dam in southern Ukraine will likely impact food security severely, as thousands of hectares of agricultural land have now been flooded. Recently planted crops have been destroyed, and authorities said that the disaster has decimated irrigation systems in the Dnipro, Kherson, and Zaporizhia regions. According to FAO, already before the disaster, one rural household in every four in the country had reduced or stopped agricultural production altogether due to the war. That number rose to more than one in three in the districts along the front line. The agency says that while agriculture is a key source of income for some 30% of the country's population, around 90% of agricultural businesses have lost revenue since Russia's full-scale invasion, and 12% reported farmland contaminated with mines. Threats from landmines are particularly significant in the Kherson region, now hard hit by the floodwaters. Meanwhile, the UN and partners have been working non-stop to provide assistance to affected communities, distributing ready-to-eat food, 12,000 bottles of water, over 1,700 kits with essential supplies for children on the move, and 10,000 water purification tablets to five municipalities in Kherson and in the city of Mykolaiv, which hosts many of the displaced. Bangladesh must immediately suspend a pilot repatriation project for Rohingya refugees to return to Myanmar, where they face serious risks to their lives and freedom, a UN-appointed independent rights expert said on Thursday. Tom Andrews, the UN Special Rapporteur on the situation of human rights in Myanmar, insisted that current conditions there were anything but conducive for the return of Rohingya refugees. He stressed that the very generals who had launched genocidal attacks against the Rohingya, causing hundreds of thousands to flee the country, were now in power and attacking civilian populations while denying the Rohingya citizenship and other basic rights. According to Mr. Andrews' statement, Bangladesh officials have been planning to send back to Myanmar, potentially very soon, an initial group of 1,140 Rohingya refugees using a combination of threats and financial rewards. The returnees would reportedly pass through transit centers in Rakhine State before being resettled in a designated area of 50 newly constructed villages, which they will not be allowed to leave freely. The return of Rohingya refugees under these conditions would likely violate Bangladesh's obligation under international law and expose Rohingya to gross human rights violations and potentially future atrocity crimes, Mr. Andrews said. More than 165,000 people are internally displaced in Haiti due to gang violence, just as the country's population faces extreme hardship because of flooding and an earthquake earlier in the week, the UN Migration Agency, IOM, said on Thursday. People are fleeing their homes because of gang attacks, lynchings by vigilantes, kidnappings, and gender-based violence, IOM said. According to the UN office in Haiti, more than 1,630 people were killed, wounded, or kidnapped during the first 3 months of 2023, a 30% increase compared to the previous quarter. Despite the challenges, IOM and its partners continue to deliver humanitarian assistance, including shelter, personal hygiene items, solar lamps, kitchen sets, and other essential articles, as well as protection measures for the displaced. The agency also warned that with the start of the cyclone season at the beginning of June, over 46,000 people were affected by torrential rains and flooding, which displaced over 13,000 others. A 4.9 magnitude earthquake on the 6th of June further compounded the humanitarian situation. Nearly half of Haiti's population, or some 5.2 million people, need aid, while the humanitarian response plan for Haiti is only 20% funded. Dominika Tomaszewska-Mortimer, UN News.
I want all privately owned radios to be immediately impounded.
Yeah,
Log Talk Radio.
Radio Free Kansas.
Well, there is such a place, Toto.
There must be. Not a place you can get to by a boat or a train. It's far, far away. Behind the moon. Beyond the rain.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have an announcement.
I can no longer sit back and allow the conspiracy to sap and impurify all of our precious bodily fluids.
Let's talk about
creeping like a communist. It's knocking at our doors, voraciously devouring the way things are today. Savagely deflowering the
official story.
Radio Free Kansas.
Madness.
Radio Free Kansas.
Madness.
Why should you put your hands, G.I.?
Now, why don't you just take it easy? Please make me a drink of grain alcohol and rainwater and help yourself to whatever you'd like.
Radio Free Kansas out of north of Jefferson County, Kansas.
Kansas.
Spirit of the Ground, voice in the air worldwide.
Well, that's it, boys. I've been redeemed.
Radio Free Kansas.
Done washed away all my sins and transgressions.
You can listen in.
Good afternoon, listeners. Welcome. It's Free Thought Friday here on Radio Free Kansas. I hope you're having a great day. TGIF. That's right. It's quit early, you know? Take off early if you can. Well, coming up following the latest headlines from this morning's Democracy Now! And don't forget, in the second hour, This Way Out, the international radio magazine for LGBTQ.
For radio as godless as our Constitution, tune in to Free Thought Radio.
We'll sue over the Oklahoma Catholic Charter School and explain why Bibles must be banned in Utah schools.
We commemorate the 60th anniversary of the decision against prayer and Bible reading in schools.
With Ellery Shemp, whose protest as a teenager resulted in the landmark ruling.
Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The Justice Department has indicted former President Donald Trump on multiple felony charges, accusing him of mishandling classified documents and obstructing the government's attempts to recover them. Trump is the first former president ever to face federal criminal charges. In a video posted on his social media platform, Truth Social, Trump lashed out against the Biden administration, insisting, "I'm an innocent man."
Our country is going to hell, and they come after Donald Trump, weaponizing the Justice Department, weaponizing the FBI. We can't let this continue to go on because it's ripping our country to shreds.
Trump reportedly faces seven charges, including the willful retention of national defense information in violation of the Espionage Act, conspiracy to obstruct justice, and false statements and representations. The charges bring maximum sentences ranging from 5 to 20 years in prison. Trump will reportedly be arraigned at a federal courthouse in Miami, Florida on Tuesday. We'll have more on Trump's indictment after headlines. Hundreds of climate change-fueled wildfires continue to scorch Canada, where tens of thousands have been displaced and residents have dealt with weeks of hazardous smoke-filled air. Here in the United States, the Northeast is beginning to see a glimpse of relief after experiencing its worst air quality in recorded history, as the smoke pushes south and westward, prompting alerts in states including Indiana and Kentucky. But New York Governor Kathy Hochul warned New Yorkers to remain vigilant.
We saw yesterday some very disturbing numbers in New York City. They've come down from the 400 level, but we should never get complacent and think that the 200 air quality quotient index is satisfactory. The message is this is not over. You know, we might get a little respite, but I don't want people to let down their guard and to become complacent about this, because we have to be prepared for the winds to shift.
The U.S. Supreme Court handed a surprise victory to the Voting Rights Act Thursday as it rejected Alabama's gerrymandered congressional maps that disempowered black voters. Justices John Roberts and Brett Kavanaugh joined the court's three liberal justices in ordering Alabama's legislature to redraw a second black majority district. The gerrymandered maps left only one of seven congressional districts with a black majority, despite African Americans making up more than a quarter of Alabama's population. We'll have more on this story later in the broadcast. In another Supreme Court ruling Thursday, justices voted to uphold the right of state nursing home residents and other recipients of Medicaid to sue if states violate their rights. The 7-2 vote came as a relief to many who worried the conservative court could seek to weaken government health programs. One public health expert explained, quote, the case is to Medicaid what Dobbs was to abortion. In more Supreme Court news, 7 out of the 9 justices released their financial disclosure reports for 2022 this week. Justices Samuel Alito and scandal-ridden Justice Clarence Thomas were given 90-day extensions to file. ProPublica recently revealed Thomas received luxury travel and other gifts from Republican megadonor Harlan Crow for decades without reporting them. The Biden administration said Thursday it's halting all food assistance to Ethiopia, citing a widespread and coordinated campaign to divert the aid away from people in need. Reuters reports USAID believes the food has been seized by Ethiopian military units. The U.S. is by far the largest donor of humanitarian aid to Ethiopia, where some 20 million people are experiencing food insecurity due to the recently ended war in Tigray and a persistent drought fueled by the climate crisis. Israeli soldiers shot a Palestinian journalist in the head during a raid in the city of Ramallah in the occupied West Bank. 22-year-old Momen Sumrin was hospitalized in serious condition after he was struck by a rubber-coated steel bullet as he documented Israeli troops' demolition of an apartment building Wednesday evening. The building was home to the family of a man who allegedly carried out a bombing attack in Jerusalem last November. Momen Sumrin was one of 6 people hospitalized as hundreds of Palestinians gathered to protest the demolition, which officials condemned as collective punishment, a war crime. 4 sisters were displaced along with their father and mother.
We as Palestinians are used to experiences like this. It is not the first home they've destroyed and it will not be the last. Their demolition activities are all about how much they hate us.
The European Union has agreed on a new plan for hosting asylum seekers following years of debate and infighting. The new proposal calls for more involvement from nations that are not on Europe's southern coast, where asylum seekers first reach the continent. Those countries could either host more incoming migrants or contribute to a joint fund managed by Brussels. The reform also sets tougher rules for processing migrants, including expediting the expulsion of people deemed unlikely to win asylum claims. Oxfam blasted the arrangement, saying, quote, EU countries plan to buy themselves out of their responsibility to welcome refugees. These proposals will not fix the chronic deficiencies in the EU asylum system. Instead, they signal the EU's desire to barricade Europe from asylum seekers, Oxfam said. In related news, at least 5 people drown and dozens are missing after 3 migrant boats capsized in the Mediterranean off the Tunisian coast in recent days. More than 2,000 people died at sea while trying to reach Europe last year. Chinese, Cuban, and U.S. officials have dismissed reports by the Wall Street Journal alleging an agreement between China and Cuba to build a multi-billion dollar electronic spy installation on the island to intercept communications from the United States. China's foreign minister denounced the story as slander. In Havana, Cuba's deputy foreign minister, Carlos Fernandez de Cossio, called the report totally mendacious and unfounded while pointing to the U.S. military's role in the region.
We reject any foreign military presence in Latin America and the Caribbean, including many bases and military forces of the United States, especially the military base that illegally occupies part of the national territory in the Guantanamo province.
And a graphic warning to our audience on this next story. In Mexico, authorities are investigating the extrajudicial execution of five men by Mexican military in the border city of Nuevo Laredo. A video posted on social media shows a group of soldiers pulling the men from their vehicle, beating them, and lining them up against a wall before fatally shooting them. This comes as Zapatista indigenous leaders marched in Mexico City Thursday, protesting the intensifying violence and attacks on their autonomous communities by paramilitary groups in the southern state of Chiapas.
We are asking for attacks from the paramilitary groups to stop. We are talking about groups that are permitted, financed, or armed by the Mexican army that attack Zapatista communities. Right now they are teaming up with organized crime groups that are holding Chiapas on the brink of a civil war.
And longtime televangelist Pat Robertson has died at the age of 93. In 1960, Robertson created the Christian Broadcasting Network and for decades used its flagship program, the 700 Club, as a platform for homophobia, religious bigotry, and racist hate speech. In 1988, Robertson ran for the Republican Party's presidential nomination, taking second place in the Iowa caucus. Robertson's strong performance cemented the Christian coalition he founded as a major force within the Republican Party. In 2001, Robertson blamed liberals, feminists, and gay people for the 9/11 attacks. He once claimed AIDS was, quote, God's way of weeding his garden, unquote. Robertson also raised funds for Contra death squads in Nicaragua and publicly called for the assassination of world leaders, including Libya's Muammar Gaddafi and Venezuela's Hugo Chavez. In the mid-1990s, during the Rwandan genocide, Robertson appealed to his audience for money to fly relief supplies to Rwandan refugees in Zaire, now the Democratic Republic of the Congo. Instead of carrying humanitarian aid, planes bought by Robertson's charity mostly transported equipment for a diamond mining operation. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now! Co-host Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Stan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven.
Imagine all the people who are living to make sure that the only afterlife that concerns them is leaving our descendants and planet a secure and pleasant future. Because the afterlife can be a very dangerous concept, especially when you have climate change. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and this is Free Thought Radio.
And I'm Dan Barker, co-host. Annie Laurie and I are co-presidents of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. And this is the June 8th, 2023 episode. Grant Blaschka with Audio for the Arts is our engineer in the Stephen Uhl Friendly Atheist Studio in Freethought Hall, the national office of the Freedom From Religion Foundation in Madison, Wisconsin.
And in a little bit, we're going to talk about that whole concept of the afterlife being a very dangerous idea. But we have lots of news before that. And Free Thought Radio, as always, is the weekly production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, which is a 501c3 tax-exempt educational organization working to educate the public, that's you, about non-theism and to keep religion out of government. It has never been more vital to do so. If you're a member, we thank you, and if not, we would love to send you complimentary no obligation information. Just ask for info at ffrf.org.
This month marks the 60th anniversary of the landmark Abington versus Shemp Supreme Court decision that declared Bible reading and recitation of the Lord's Prayer in public schools unconstitutional. That came down June 17, 1963. And in a few minutes, we'll be honored to speak with Ellery Shemp, who, as a high school student, initiated the protest that resulted in that landmark ruling.
And Ellery Shemp, who's a life member of FFRF, he's now in his 80s, is still as committed today to keeping state and church separate as he was 60 years ago. And he has some very interesting things to say about his positive legacy, as well as the current dangers that threaten our First Amendment freedoms. So stay tuned for that important interview in the second half of today's show.
Today is the anniversary of the birth of the German composer Robert Schumann. He was born June 8, 1810. Schumann rejected his family's Christian beliefs after he read the works of Schiller and Goethe and many freethinkers. Just before he died in 1856, he and Johannes Brahms and Clara Schumann stopped at the Beethoven statue. That monument was his church and his altar, a biographer wrote. Listen for Schumann's music today, including Traumerei, Concerto in A Minor, Merry Peasant, and Kreisleriana.
And this week on FFRS Ask an Atheist, I spoke with two Minnesota humanist activists, Ellie Haland, who's the president of Humanist Minnesota, and Suzanne Perry, who's an FFRF member and a board member of Humanist Minnesota, who recently put up a very successful billboard campaign. And Ellie Haland describes that billboard campaign.
This campaign this year, we had two billboards, both in St. Paul near the state capitol. And as you can see, one said, protect our democracy, keep religion out of government. And the other one, the more, I would say, controversial billboard, that one, we called it out a little more specifically, reject Christian nationalism. Obviously, by way of that, it's creating visibility for our organization. But the most important thing here was to bring attention to this issue that we're seeing across the country that's a large threat to democracy. We weren't trying to be controversial, but we also didn't want to mince words and kind of be subtle when it's pretty clear what we needed to say.
And Suzanne Perry explained why it's so important to challenge Christian nationalism. And by the way, she wrote a very powerful and popular op-ed about Christian nationalism.
The religious right has always been with us. But I think what's happening now is that it's being merged with this idea that Christians should take over the government. And that involves, of course, the repression of women, repression of LGBTQ people. And I think we got especially disturbed in terms of what led up to this billboard after the January 6th insurrection. There were so many influences of Christian nationalism there, from the Bible readings to the photos of Jesus merged with Trump, crosses, flags. And so I think it's taken a step in a more dangerous direction. These people are kind of being brought into the establishment, of, at least of the right wing. And that's really disturbing.
So you can still catch that show on FFRF's YouTube channel looking for the Ask an Atheist playlist.
And a new episode of Ask an Atheist airs almost every Wednesday at 12 noon Central on Facebook Live on the Freedom From Religion Foundation's Facebook page, where you can ask questions during the live show. You can find it at facebook.com/4FFRF.
So we do want to mention a recent, rather notorious comment by Texan David Barton. He is the guy who spreads so much dangerous misinformation and lies about our supposedly Christian nation. And he and a bunch of other Christian nationalists recently were at something called the TPUSA Faith Group.
Turning Point.
Turning Point USA Faith Organization. They met in Nashville. There was a pastor summit in late May, and listen to what he said.
Proverbs 21:22 says, a wise man attacks the city of the mighty and tears down the stronghold in which he trusts. So a wise man attacks the strongholds. Now, how do you do that? Again, going back to what the court has done in the last 4 years, the court has said, hey, all those previous precedents, 7,300 cases, off the table. You know what that involves? It involves things like the Ten Commandments. Let's start putting up Ten Commandments again. Did you know that in the 1940s, more than 10,000 classrooms had the Ten Commandments posted, and there were 180 monuments to Ten Commandments at city halls and at state capitals? Go back to doing that. Let's start public meetings with prayer. Let's start every city council meeting with prayer. Let's start school board meetings with prayer. Let's get everything going back to prayer. The same way, in God We Trust this place, we ought to be putting the national motto up everywhere we can paint it. You can do the same thing with student-led prayer. So encourage your students in your church, encourage your youth group to ask for prayer at schools and start leading prayer at schools. Matter of fact, we haven't been able to have prayer graduations for about 20 years. Go back to doing that. This is all back on the table. This was taken out in the last 20 years when the court was saying, oh, you have to be secular. We don't have to be secular.
Well, by the way, it's been more than 30 years, and many graduations did not have prayer even before that. But this is the agenda of the Christian nationalists, and you heard it here, and you're going to keep hearing it, and we need to be prepared to really fight it.
And that's what the Freedom From Religion Foundation is all about, fighting these distortions and these lies. We can't help commenting on a very sad story and on the irony in a tragic case of an 11-month-old girl who died after her parents left her in a hot car while they were attending church. The police in Palm Bay, Florida are still investigating this death after she was left in the hot car for 3 hours as her parents attended the Mount of Olives Evangelical Baptist Church in Florida. And
but the point of this is what the police chief said that was so ironic.
The Palm Bay police chief, Mario Aguayo, he called it an unfortunate incident, and our condolences and prayers go out to the family.
So if there were a God, where was that God?
Exactly.
There's a child in front of a church dying a tragic death. So there is a lot of important news, and after the last show we record on Thursdays, on last Friday, came down this rather amazing news that a Utah school district is banning the Bible from public school libraries in Davis County at the elementary and middle school levels. In fact, it's only the King James Version of the Bible. But this is the result of a complaint by a parent because there's a new law in Texas, in Utah, that allows parents to complain about sensitive material, pornographic material, obscenity in books. And committees then have to review them. And this has been going on, many, many books removed, such as Toni Morrison's Bluest Eye in Davis County Schools. So this parent in December said, what about the Bible? And the Freedom From Religion Foundation backed that up because the district had done nothing as of late April. So we wrote a backup letter that they have to be content neutral if they're going to adopt policy about pornography or graphic material being removed from the libraries. And so on Friday, they actually announced, and of course it's called Great Consternation, that they were removing it from the lower grades, but not the high schools. So we have written yet another letter, Chris Line, our attorney, a follow-up letter saying they need to remove all the Bibles, not just the King James, from the lower levels and from the high schools. And we pointed out, for example, that they banned a book that's a New York Times bestseller called Milk and Honey, by a Canadian woman, a survivor of sexual assault. And this is a book to help survivors of sexual assault. And 13% of Utahns report being molested before the age of 18, one-third of them before their 10th birthday. And yet the Bible, with its warped family values and its slander about incest, you know, look at the story of these so-called virgin daughters of Lot seducing their father. This is allowed to be in our schools, and it's blighted many young lives. So, of course, we're not in favor of book bans, but we are in favor of even-handed policies, and they should be careful what they're wishing for.
If they want to ban books, then the Bible should be at the top of the list.
So we also, a huge development, a very, very bad development that is meaningful for the whole nation. The an Oklahoma statewide virtual charter school board on June 5th, gave the go-ahead to the Archdiocese of Oklahoma City and the Diocese of Tulsa to run a religious, that is, Catholic charter school. And this is something that the Freedom from Religion Foundation had objected to back in January. Our legal fellow, Karen Heineman, wrote a 10-page memo pointing out this is totally unconstitutional according to even the state constitution. And they have said that this charter school will only follow laws that don't conflict with Catholic law. It's the brainchild of the Notre Dame Law Clinic, and they are talking about doing this nationwide. They have been agitating for more than a century to demand public support for religious parochial schools, and this is how they plan to get it. And the Freedom from Religion Foundation will be suing. We were waiting to see if the Attorney General is going to sue, and he's just not going to defend the case. We're working with a national coalition. We will be part of that coalition, and this couldn't be more concerning and alarming. And those of you who are supporters of FFRF, thank you. We'll be using your support for our litigation here and keeping you posted on that. And in a welcome development this week, the Southern Poverty Law Center has included white Christian nationalism in its annual Year in Hate and Extremism report. And that's a very important development. They haven't done it before. And their section on white Christian nationalism mentions that it's a key ideology that inspired the failed January 6th insurrection and has fueled multiple failed political campaigns in 2022. And it mentions the Freedom from Religion Foundation's and the BAP Joint Committee's joint report on Christian nationalism at the January 6th attack. And it quotes two of our authors. So we were extremely pleased to see that, and we'll be covering more about that.
It's the Baptist Joint Committee for Religious Liberty, the group we worked with. So we have some complaints around the country. Our attorneys are very busy. Chris Lyon wrote a letter to an Arizona school board because the Peoria Unified School District in Arizona, one of the board members there, Heather Rooks, has been imposing her personal religious beliefs on the parents and community members during the official board meetings. At the May 11th meeting, for example, she quoted Matthew 18:16, which basically says, people who don't believe, it's better if they have a large millstone hung around their neck to be drowned in the depths of the sea.
And that's a Bible quote.
Yeah, she can have those views. She can talk about them in church, but at an official board meeting, that is unconstitutional. We and members there in Arizona are complaining about that. And then over in Georgia, there's another proselytizing coach. This is in the Houston County School District. Northside High School coach Ben Bailey has been leading Bible studies. He's been praying with the students. The team's official Facebook page shows Coach Bailey preaching to the students from the Bible and posting New Testament verses. So again, Chris Lyon, who wrote the previous letter I mentioned, wrote a letter to that Georgia school district saying this needs to stop. Schools exist to educate, not to indoctrinate.
And as our headline said, it is constitutionally out of bounds.
So we're going to take a break, and after the break, we're going to talk about religion and climate change and about Pat Robertson. And then in the second half of the show, we'll speak with a true champion of the First Amendment, Ellery Shemp, who, as a high school student, initiated that historic 1963 lawsuit that removed Bible reading and the recitation of the Lord's Prayer from public schools. Let's go out with a little bit of Schumann.
Steve Pinker. In my book, Enlightenment Now, I show that the world has become a better place as reason has been overcoming superstition and tribalism. But the values of the Enlightenment are under attack. That's why I'm a proud member of the Freedom from Religion Foundation, the nation's largest association of free thinkers working to keep state and church separate. Please join me in supporting the Freedom from Religion Foundation to ensure that our government is driven not by religion, but by reason.
Speaking freely, thinking freely. This is Free Thought Radio.
Free Thought Radio is back. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And I'm Dan Barker. This week, we note the death of Pat Robertson. He was the founder of the PTL Club, Praise the Lord Club, and the Christian Coalition. Pat Robertson, in the late 80s, ran for president and inaugurated a form of political evangelism that we're seeing a lot more of today. And, of course,
and also the ACLJ, which has been very disruptive to
legal
constitutional
group.
Law.
So his views were not benign.
No. You know, he famously said that feminism led women to leave their husbands, kill their children, practice witchcraft, destroy capitalism, and become lesbians. He actually called for the assassination of Hugo Chavez when he was the Venezuelan president. He claimed that towels carry AIDS. He blamed mass shootings on liberals and godlessness, and he also famously, with Jerry Falwell, blamed 9/11 on, quote, pagans, abortionists, feminists, gays, lesbians, the ACLU, and People for the American Way, and FFRF was very insulted to have been left off that list.
So let's listen to a 1988 clip from Saturday Night Live when Pat Robertson was running for president and trying to distance himself from being identified as a televangelist. The church lady is played by Dana Carvey, and Pat Robertson is being played by Al Franken.
And now it's time for Church Chat.
Settle down. All right, hello, I'm the church lady, and this is Church Chat. My first guest is the Reverend Pat Robertson, a former Christian broadcaster, whose memory's gotten just a little bit fuzzy about his role as a televangelist. Just who is Patrick, presidential candidate or Satan worshiper? You be the judge. Welcome, Patrick.
Well, thank you, church lady, for letting me come on your show and settle it once and for all. I'm a presidential candidate and not a televangelist.
Well, have we ever heard of a little thing called the 700 Club?
Well,
I guess that doesn't count.
Show was basically a Judeo-Christian news show, and I was more a telejournalist than I ever was a televangelist.
So we just put the Electoral College right ahead of the Bible College, don't we? Just push Jesus aside and go right for the Satan vote.
Well, the issue is really not my religion. It's leadership. We learned the whereabouts of those TWA hostages and all about those Soviet missiles in Cuba, but no one chooses to believe me.
And what else do we think we know, Pat?
Well, there is just so much that we aren't told about Afghanistan and the UFOs or the fact that Hitler's brain is being kept alive in Paraguay.
Well, isn't that special?
That was Dana Carvey and Al Franken.
And, of course, all of those hurricanes that he was going to pray away.
I misspoke earlier. It wasn't the PTL Club. It was the 700 Club that he started.
So, of course, Pat Robertson was one of the many white evangelical religious-based climate change deniers. And we do want to talk just a little bit about that. I did a blog for FFRF Action Fund, which is FFRF's lobbying arm, pointing out that fundamentalist religious beliefs about dominating the earth and having an afterlife are a serious threat to the future of the planet. And, you know, there's so many people who think, there's that old hymn, Dan, you're familiar with, this world is not my home. I'm just a passing through. Yeah. So what you really care about is the afterlife. So on Fox News recently, there were three co-hosts talking about, well, criticizing Democrats, really, and saying that climate change is a new religion. And let's listen to co-host Rachel Campos Duffy.
Sometimes, you know, we look at how hard on the left they play. For them, where we live right now, this place, Earth, is it. So everything's on the line here for them. They think that they can perfect this mm-hmm. Earth. Those of us who have faith don't believe that, and we believe how we act here determines where we go after. And so we had to behave. And so even in politics, we act within those moral limits. Mm-hmm. And the ends justify the means is sort of the rules for radicals, right? Well, that's not how Christians act.
So come to think of it, Fox's Campos Duffy actually presented the realist position rather well. Where we live now, Earth, is it. Everything is on the line for us.
We're going to take a break now, and after the break, we're going to speak with someone who agrees with that sentiment. Everything is on the line in this only world that we have, Ellery Schimpp. He is the student, he was a student who initiated the historic 1963 lawsuit that removed Bible reading and recitation of the Lord's Prayer from public schools. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor, and we'll be back with more Free Thought Radio.
I'm Ron Reagan, an unabashed atheist, and I'm alarmed by the intrusions of religion into our secular government. That's why I'm asking you to join the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest and most effective organization of atheists and agnostics, working to keep state and church separate. Phone 1-800-335-4021, 1-800-335-4021, or visit the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org. Ron Reagan, lifelong atheist, not afraid of burning in hell.
Beware of dogma. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And I'm Dan Barker. Welcome back. Our guest today is an esteemed one, Ellery Schimpp, who sparked the historic legal battle over religion in public schools 60 years ago that resulted in the landmark Supreme Court decision, Abington versus Schimpp. That decision ruled that Bible reading and recitation of the Lord's Prayer in public schools violate the U.S. Constitution. Before we talk with Ellery, let's listen to CBS reports that aired on television in June 1963.
Here is CBS News correspondent Eric Severide.
Good evening. 2 days ago, the United States Supreme Court handed down decisions in two cases involving Bible reading and recitation of the Lord's Prayer in the public schools.
This is the home of Mr. and Mrs. Edward Schimpp and their three children in Roslyn, Pennsylvania. Ellery Schimpp, the oldest child, explains how it all started.
Well, I guess it began when I was a junior in high school. I was in the Abington Senior High School, and in our English class, a group of students had been meeting together and talking over issues of all varieties, religious issues, political issues. There was sort of a consensus that the Bible reading and the Lord's Prayer in the public schools was not only undesirable, but in violation of the First Amendment of the Constitution. We were concerned with the role that we might play as citizens in building a better world. We were idealists, I'm sure. And in November of 1956, I came to the conclusion that I would make a protest against this. Instead of listening to the Lord's Prayer and the Bible reading, I sat at my desk reading a copy of the Koran, and I did not stand for the Lord's Prayer, and then I stood for the flag salute, as was customary. The reaction, of course, was very immediate in the classroom. A teacher came to my side and told me that in the future I would have to stand for the Lord's Prayer and pay attention during the Bible reading. And I had to reply that in conscience I could no longer participate in the ceremony, and I was sent to the principal. he sent me to the guidance counselor for I was clearly in need of psychological help. The guidance counselor and I had a brief chat, and I returned to classes that day. Coming home in the evening, I sat down and wrote a letter to the American Civil Liberties Union, and I stated that I thought the practice was a bad one, probably unconstitutional, and would they be interested in helping?
That letter was received at the Philadelphia branch of the American Civil Liberties Union by Executive Director Spencer Cox.
We never got around to considering it at all until February, when one of our committees, composed mostly of lawyers, took a look at it, and that committee at that time decided that we should not get involved on behalf of Ellery Shemp on the grounds that the issue was not a very important one.
But the Shemps thought it was important.
I believe that I was right very fervently, and I thought that gave me a stand that would overcome all obstacles.
And he did overcome all obstacles, and that was the young Ellery Shemp being recorded back in 1963 when their family won this case. Ellery went on to earn a doctorate in physics from Brown University, was a researcher at Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory. He helped develop magnetic imagery technology at General Electric. He's also worked on superconductor projects and nuclear waste. Ellery was also a professor at the University of Pittsburgh. He taught at the University of Geneva in Switzerland. He's now retired, an octogenarian, living in the Boston area. And we are so glad to speak with you. I'm giving you a figurative shake of the hand, Ellery. Welcome back to Free Thought Radio.
Well, thank you very much, Annie. That was very lovely what you did.
So, Ellery, before we talk about your 60-year legacy and this court case, I do have to ask, you're there in Boston in the middle of this terrible environmental problem where the air is hazardous because of the wildfires in Canada. How are things there?
Well, it's very smoky here. It's actually terrible to be sitting at your home and be able to smell smoke. It's not a happy thing at all. And this is in part because, you know, the Christian right has denied that there's any such thing as global warming, global climate change, and the climate change is very severe.
Well, we aren't going to.
And I can say that with a great deal of authority, because I've been to the Arctic. I've been to within 400 miles of the North Pole. I've been to the Greenland and hiked there. I've been to Antarctica. I've been to within 800 miles of the South Pole. I've walked on glaciers, and I know about glaciers. And it's very sad to see them melting.
Yes, it is, and we aren't going to pray about it, but we will hope for that rain that's predicted soon to make everybody's lungs clearer. And so Ellery, how is your 60-year legacy holding up?
Well, it's under threat because the evangelical right has captured the right way, the party, and embraced all kinds of conspiracy theories. But I like to consider the Bible versus the Constitution. You know, the Bible never, and I began to thinking about this when I was 16 years old, 70 years ago. But let's consider the Bible versus the Constitution. The Bible never mentions democracy. It never mentions voting. The government, the Bible never mentions a government of checks and balances. It never mentions an independent judiciary. It's a very strange thing that most Americans don't understand. The Bible never mentions freedom of speech. It never mentions freedom of religion. And in the biblical times, the rulers that they talk about were kings and priests. Well, you know, priests are not elected, and they answer to no one. They take the tax money now for charter schools in our day and age, but they've used their power to abuse children. Pastors and preachers and bishops and archbishops, you know, are not part of the democratic system. But let's consider the Constitution. The Constitution never mentions God, never mentions divine this or that, divine providence or whatever. And when we look at the Constitution, it says we the people, not God and somebody else, providence, whatever. And the oath of office, when we think about that, nobody ever thinks about this very much anymore, but the phrase that constantly reappears in the Constitution is swear or affirm. And that's very interesting, because to swear in 1790s meant to have a religious conviction behind it, a religious impetus behind it. And so the phrase to affirm was added in order to allow people not to have a religious sentiment about this, but to simply give their assent. And I think that's very important to understand the difference between to swear and affirm.
So you've been thinking about this for many years, haven't you?
Sorry?
You've been thinking about all this for many decades.
I'm 60 years old. I'm 82 years old, and I've been thinking about it for 60 years.
And Ellery, you're just as feisty now as you were when you were that 16-year-old boy protesting at your school and bringing about this wonderful lawsuit. And we should say that your story has inspired a book called Ellery's Protest, How One
Yes,
Young
I
Man...
Yes, I highly recommend this book. I didn't write it, and I didn't choose the title even. But it's actually quite accurate. I've read it, of course, and I think Stephen Solomon did a wonderful job writing this book.
And you must have cooperated with him a great deal when he was writing it.
Well, I cooperated. I talked to him several times and checked various facts and whatever. He uncovered various things that I didn't know. One of the amazing things he discovered was that the records of the district court case in Philadelphia in August 5th of 1958 have been kept in the National Archives. And there was a copy of the letter that I wrote to the ACLU that I typed out on my dad's typewriter with two fingers.
Wow.
And that's part of the National Archives.
That's really fun.
That amused me to no end.
And also, there was I guess you'd call it a funny, not really ha-ha story, where you were when you heard the case that you won.
Oh, that is a funny story. Well, I was married at that time to Josephine Hallett, was my first wife, and we were took the summer off to go hiking on all the mountains in the West, and Yellowstone and Canadian Rockies and all sorts of places, because I was very active in the outdoors, and one of the great things that Tufts University did for me is to introduce me to these outdoor activities with my roommate, Roger Hart. And anyhow, so we were in the middle of South Dakota, and the news came across that the Supreme Court had made its decision. And so we were very keen to see what would be reported, as you just did with Walter Cronkite on CBS News.
With Eric Severide, yeah.
Severide, sorry.
Yeah.
So we got off the highway and went to the nearest town and said, we'd like to be able to watch the TV news of it this evening. Well, in those days, they didn't have TVs in many. We were talking about
1963.
Yeah. And we said, we don't want a room. We just want to be able to watch TV for half an hour or something. And he got incensed. He thought we were obviously interested in having sex, and we're not going to rent you a hotel room.
So you missed? Did you miss the news?
He finally referred us to another hotel where he thought they had a TV in their lobby, but I remember him calling it up, and I overheard, of course. And they said, well, we're sending these people over to you, but don't let them have a hotel room. Don't let them have a room.
That is really funny.
It was really quite funny.
Well, so when we come back...
Now, I mean, to go back to the important points that I want to make is that, the Declaration of Independence, people don't understand this. It's not part of our laws, and it represents a particular religious belief. But it's not related to Christ or Jesus or anything. So it's important to understand that the Declaration of Independence is not part of our laws. No court decision is ever dependent upon it, and therefore the idea that that it somehow overrides the Constitution is completely wrong.
So you're talking about its nominal references to providence or creator.
Yeah,
and then we hear the religious right trying to say, "Oh, there's God in our government." Well, you're absolutely right. That was 1776. Well, we have to take a break, and when we come back, I want to hear more about the lawsuit and more about your concerns about whether we can keep it as the prevailing law.
We're talking with Ellery Shemp of the famous 1963 Abington versus Shemp lawsuit that the Supreme Court ruled unconstitutional Bible reading and the recitation of the Lord's Prayer in public schools. We'll be right back with more Free Thought Radio.
And I'm an atheist and former Catholic. I even wrote a play about it called Letting Go of God. Right now, Catholic bishops are using their considerable influence to deny women contraceptive rights. Please join the Freedom From Religion Foundation and help keep church and state separate. You can call 1-800-335-4021, that's 1-800-335-4021, or visit ffrf.org to stand up for true religious freedom.
As Mark Twain said, faith is believing what you know ain't so. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And I'm Dan Barker, and we're celebrating the 60th anniversary of the June 17th, 1963 U.S. Supreme Court decision in Abington versus Shemp, which outlawed Bible reading and the Lord's Prayer in public schools, by speaking with Ellery Shemp, who was the high schooler who initiated that complaint.
And I just want to point out that it was an 8-1 ruling, a wonderful decision, which is very much endangered. And we want to welcome back onto Free Thought Radio, Ellery Shemp. And I know, Ellery, you're very concerned about the future of your case. You're very concerned that there's a lot of misinformation about our secular form of government. So we're giving you the podium.
Well, thank you very much, Andy. Well, I wanted to point out that the law required the Holy Bible to be read, but it doesn't. The idea of the Holy Bible doesn't completely misunderstands the idea that there are 30 Protestant versions, and there's the Catholic Douay version of the Bible, and there's Orthodox versions in two different forms of. And the Coptic version. So the holy thing, the whole idea of there must be a holy scripture or a holy Bible was very objectionable to me. And we have to think, you know, that holy wars are, and imagine the whole idea of indoctrination. Think of the average kid who went to high school and 2,280 times had to recite the Lord's Prayer. And listen to some verse and recite the Pledge of Allegiance. If you talk about indoctrination, if you talk about grooming children, 2,280 times a child has repeated the Lord's Prayer. This is grooming.
Yeah, it's
this
brainwashing.
Brainwashing. So, and the whole idea that it promotes magical thinking, an invisible sky god. And I remember the thinking that Noah's flood. Well, Noah's flood couldn't possibly happen. And then I read about, you know, the talking snakes. Well, I disbelieved in talking snakes, but then Glenn Beck and Sarah Palin came along, so I had to revise.
So, Ellery, do you remember some of the Bible verses that they recited? Did they change the Bible verses every day?
The Bible reading was extremely unplanned because a kid, in the early grades, of course, the teacher read the Bible. But by the seventh grade or so, the teacher said, look, Charlie, you read the Bible this morning and Susan the next day and do it in rotation. And what would happen is, you know, when you're in 10th grade, you'd stumble into school sort of half awake. And look around for where the Bible, and somebody would say, it's your turn to read the Bible. And you would stumble around and find a copy of it, and it was always the King James Version. And you opened it at random, because nobody knew. And then you read it very, very poorly because, you know, reading the King James Version aloud for the first time you're seeing it is not an easy thing to do. Everybody got it wrong.
I remember that, Ellery, at Anaheim High School in the early 60s, students would read over the loudspeaker, and then we had to stop, all because of you.
I bet there were some embarrassing passages that were inadvertently chosen.
I remember one time I got a little annoyed, and I started reading passages from the Song of Solomon. The Song of Solomon is kind of sexy. And you know, tie thy two breasts in the morning dew or something like that.
Yeah.
This is pretty heady stuff for 14-year-olds, especially when it's sanctioned by the school.
By the way, Ellery, since that time, there are more than 30 English translations. Right now, there's about 52 popular English translations of the Bible.
Yeah. So I think we have to ask the question in terms of freedom of religion and separation of church and state. What do we want? A society and government that respects freedom of ideas and rejects violence? Freedom of religion does not achieve this. The threat of the religious evangelical right is to pre-exercise to eclipse the non-establishment clause. Non-establishment is vital to prevent government from endorsing, favoring religion over non-religion and one religion over another. I think this is very important. I mean, let's recall that governments don't have freedom or don't have separation of church and state, these are governments like Afghanistan and Pakistan and Burma, Myanmar, and Saudi Arabia. I mean, the theocratic impetus is still extremely important and threatening. I mean, in Russia, for example, Putin has embraced the Orthodox churches and formed an alliance with the churches and to support his oppression and tortures for non-believers.
Well, I mean, we're seeing the same thing here in this country, Ellery. I mean, look at almost the entire South has now banned abortion. We only have Virginia that hasn't fallen. We have all of these states adopting these hysterical anti-trans bills. Yeah. We have the Oklahoma charter school that you mentioned. We have voucher school bills, laws being passed left and right. We are losing our secular republic.
You're exactly right, and this is very much concerns me, and that's why I think you invited me on to talk about this. So the thrust of the evangelical right is to promote free expression to overcome the establishment clause. And, you know, they talk about us being an evil nation, or we're smited by some god who disapproves of us. Well, I think we have to take into account public safety. And if everyone's right, if the religious right is succeeds, it'll be everyone's right to exercise their own religion. For example, I have a devout belief against red lights. I mean, it really is. and ritual killing of rabbits and all kinds of crazy notions. Delusions and hallucinations are protected. Well, we need to sort out the difference between mental illness and religious cults and culture wars and conspiracies. How devout thou art. You need 10 followers to be a legitimate church. Even Stephen Breyer, who I much admired, voted to allow flags to be flown over City Hall, allowing the government to endorse religious notions. I think that's ridiculous. And the people who brought this won a $200,000 settlement from the city of Boston. All of us taxpayers had to pay part of this in order to allow these religious flags to be flown over City Hall. Well, I think we're coming to the end of our time, but I recall the words from the Engel decision in 1962. That was an 8-0 decision about prayers. And I quote here, and I want everybody to remember this phrase, it is no part of the business of government to be composing prayers. I think we need to think on this every time separation of religion and government comes up. Is this the business of government?
Yeah.
Well, we salute you, Ellery, and your family, and this 60th anniversary of this very important decision that we are very concerned will be unraveled by our current Trump-supported Supreme Court. But it was an 8-1 ruling, and congratulations.
Thank you, Annie. Thank you for all the things that FFR does, the Freedom From Religion Foundation does. You're an important bulwark for looking to preserving truth and understanding for separation of church and state.
Well, that means a lot coming from you, Ellery.
Yes, it does.
Shemp. Thank you so much. Now we want to thank our listeners. We have listeners in Philadelphia to WOOMLP and in Bryn Mawr to WZML. Here in Madison, Wisconsin to WIDE and WMUU, and in Janesville, Wisconsin to WADR. In Bryan, Texas, KEOS, San Marcos, Texas, KZSM, Columbia, Missouri, KOPN, Eugene, Oregon, KEPW, Bellows Falls, Vermont, WOOL, Kingston, Rhode Island, WRIU, Ithaca, Watkins Glen, New York, WRFI. And of course, hello to all of you podcast listeners. Tell your friends and family to learn more about Free Thought Radio at ffrf.org/radio.
And you can also listen to the new podcast, We Dissent, featuring female attorneys working for FFRF and other state church groups. We would urge you to ask for information about the Freedom From Religion Foundation and support our vital work, which will include suing the state of Oklahoma. You can request a copy of our newspaper, Free Thought Today, and join the largest Free Thought Association in North America. Check us out at ffrf.org and tune in next week for more rational radio and blasphemous broadcasting.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, ffrf.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.
I hope someday you'll join us and the world will live as one.
This is Carl G. from the Abolitionist Hour, every Saturday, 12 p.m., where we broadcast the news that you won't find on cable. Ever wonder what Gen Z is up to? Have you heard of Generation U? Ever wonder why the old geezers are excited that something's going on since their days of living underground and avoiding the Vietnam draft? We cover these topics on the Abolitionist Hour, and we kind of give you updates on the front, whether it's Atlanta, Minneapolis, St. Louis, Kansas City. We'll keep you updated on news and information on the state of dismal prison conditions and why the Jackson County Jail is not just a stockade. It's a phone company. So join us at the Abolitionist Hour, only on Blog Talk Radio, 12 p.m. Central Standard Time. We'll see you there.
And from the plains of Wyoming, drunk men came hurrying through. While Britannia's Huns with her long-range guns came in through the foggy tears. Back to the glen I rode again, and my heart with grief was sore. For I parted them with valiant whom I never shall see more.
The day the Board of Supervisors in San Francisco was sworn in, the tradition is every supervisor gets up and introduces their family there. And the first words out of my mouth was, as you know, I am gay. There's a state law that says gay people cannot legally be married, but there is no state law or law any place in the universe that says two people cannot love each other. And I like to introduce my lover.
Happy birthday!
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. Uganda enacts dreaded Anti-Homosexuality Act, second to Japanese district court slams marriage equality ban, and Harvey Milk's 90th birthday kicks off Pride season. Those stories and more this week now that you've found This Way Out.
I'm Jill Bainline.
And I'm Ava Davis.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending June 3rd, 2023. Uganda's dreaded Anti-Homosexuality Act became law on May 29th. President Yoweri Museveni signed the latest version of the notorious measure he had sent back to lawmakers for further consideration in April. MPs accepted his suggestions to axe the provisions that made just coming out a crime and requiring citizens to report acts of homosexuality. However, they kept penalties of up to life in prison for engaging in private consensual adult same-gender sex, repeat offenses, and sex with certain protected groups, or sex while HIV positive, are considered aggravated homosexuality and punishable by death. The Constitutional Court overturned the anti-homosexuality bill enacted in the East African nation in 2014 on a legal technicality. It also included the death penalty. For Ugandan LGBTQ and intersex activist Jacqueline Kashanaba Kasera, it's a dark day for human rights of LGBTQIA+ and allies. Activist Delovi Kwagala became emotional speaking with Democracy Now! About Museveni's decision to sign the Anti-Homosexuality Act.
There's no hope, but where are we supposed to go? You don't want us in your country. You're not giving us jobs. You're not giving us education. You're not giving us medication. You are criminalizing people renting to us. Where do you want us to go? You are arresting us for literally doing nothing, for simply existing, you know? But where are we supposed to go? How did we become refugees in our own country?
More out queer activists and allies in Uganda warn that the law is already encouraging assaults by violent vigilantes against them and people just perceived to be queer. LGBTQ activist groups from elsewhere on the African continent have harshly criticized the new law. Leaders in several Western nations are hinting at cuts in aid and travel restrictions. That list includes Australia's lesbian foreign minister, Penny Wong, European Union foreign policy chief, Joseph Borrell, British government officials, the UN Human Rights Office, and U.S. President Joe Biden and Secretary of State Antony Blinken. Some defiant Ugandan lawmakers have said that they expected to lose some foreign aid when they passed the Anti-Homosexuality Act 2023. They insist on not bowing to Western pressures. Equality advocates in Uganda are already filing suit to challenge the latest version of the country's new Kill the Gays law.
LGBTQ people in Turkey have a lot to worry about with the re-election of Islamic President Recep Tayyip Erdogan. Dehumanizing queer people was one of the pillars of his runoff election campaign that ended on May 28th. Once again, he fell back on calling them perverts and a threat to traditional family values. During his victory speech, Erdogan asked euphoric supporters if his party was LGBTQ friendly. No was the enthusiastic response. It was Erdogan's most serious re-election challenge since he was first elected president in 2014. He had served as prime minister since 2003. His increasingly autocratic reign will now remain in power until at least 2028. 39-year-old documentary filmmaker Tuba Baykal told Agence France-Presse that being openly queer has made it virtually impossible to find work. She predicts that many will flee to more welcoming countries. She said it to the United States. University student İlker Erdoğan is fortunately not related to his nemesis. The 20-year-old queer activist told the French news agency, "From the moment I was born, I felt that discrimination, homophobia, and hatred in my bones. I feel deeply afraid." But İlker is firm, saying, "I'm also a part of this nation. My identity card says Turkish citizen. You cannot erase my existence, no matter how hard you try."
Latvia's out foreign minister, Edgars Rinkevičs, made history this week when parliament elected him president. He's the first queer head of state of a Baltic nation or in the European Union. The 12-year foreign minister enjoys considerable popular support, even though Latvia's population is socially conservative. The president's role is largely ceremonial. Europe's openly queer prime ministers have wielded considerably more power. Rinkevich can dissolve parliament, and he'll represent Latvia abroad, serve as the supreme commander of the country's armed forces, nominate the prime minister, and sign bills into law. His election thrilled queer activists, as it coincidentally came during Pride Week in the nation's capital, Riga. The advocacy group Mosaica and Riga Pride issued a joint press release celebrating the absolute inspiration to many young people and the LGBTQ community at large. Rinkevich will be inaugurated on July 8th.
The Nagoya District Court has decided that Japan's ban on same-gender civil marriage is unconstitutional. It's the second regional jurisdiction to come to that conclusion, following the Sapporo District Court. Contrary rulings in Osaka and Tokyo District Courts have supported the ban. 13 same-gender couples filed Valentine's Day marriage equality lawsuits across the country on February 14, 2019. Another ruling is due at the Fukuoka District Court on June 8. Steadfast opposition to equality in the courts and in the legislature has come from the conservative federal government of Prime Minister Fumio Kishida. He and his ruling Liberal Democratic Party are under increasing pressure to open the civil institution to lesbian and gay couples. Japan is the only group of seven economic powerhouse nations without it. Kishida's government offered a bill in parliament to promote understanding of LGBTQ people before hosting the recent G7 summit in Hiroshima. Resistance from the administration caused an almost fatal delay, according to Reuters. A watered-down version of the largely meaningless bill was submitted to parliament the day before the summit.
Thousands of Israelis and visiting tourists celebrated LGBTQ pride in Jerusalem on June 1st. Recollections of the anti-queer violence at past festivities made for high tensions during the event, but there were no serious incidents this year. A spokesperson said that about 2,000 police officers were brought in to ensure the safety of marchers and observers. They also prevented any confrontations between celebrants and the small anti-queer counter-demonstration nearby. This was the first Pride parade since Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's far-right government took power. Several of his cabinet ministers have expressed their antipathy for LGBTQ people. National Security Minister Itamar Ben-Gvir is one of the most vocal opponents of equality. Ironically, it was his job to protect the celebration. Jerusalem Open House organizes the annual event. They estimate that 30,000 people marched or lined the parade route, the largest crowd in recent years.
Finally, the U.S. Pentagon has made a stand to defend Nellis Air Force Base from its planned Pride Month drag show, with President Joe Biden's recently issued Pride Month proclamation dangling in the background. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin and Joint Chiefs Chairman General Mark Milley canceled the event, trumping the approval of Air Force officials. A Defense Department spokesperson told reporters that the Pentagon does not fund drag shows on military bases. Organizers were instructed to either call off the event or move it away from the base, located northeast of Las Vegas, Nevada. Critics charged the brass with bowing to anti-drag pressure from ultra-conservative Republican politicians. For example, Florida's Congressman Matt Gaetz and Senator Mark Rubio have made outrageously stupid claims about drag queens, calling them groomers and strippers, and accusing them of engaging in sex acts in front of children. That kind of pressure also sank the Navy's traditional posts celebrating Pride Month on its Twitter and Instagram accounts, according to The Hill. RuPaul's Drag Race contestant Coco Montrese participated in the Nellis Air Force Base's Pride Month drag show in 2021, but missed the event last year. The performer, known in real life as Martin Cooper, told The Washington Post that he was looking forward to this year's show and worried that the cancellation sends the wrong message to LGBTQ service members. Cooper said, basically, they're saying to them, you can be who you are, but you just can't be that here.
That's News Wrap. Global queer news with attitude for the week ending June 3rd, 2023. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon, edited by Lucia Chappell, produced by Brian DeShazer, and brought to you by you.
Thank you. Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more. For This Way Out, I'm Ava Davis. Stay healthy.
And I'm Joe Bainline. Stay safe.
Our listeners support This Way Out in many ways.
By subscribing to our e-newsletter,
email us at info@thiswayout.org.
And through your financial contributions to our program.
More information about how you can give is online at thiswayout.org.
Thank you.
June brings a new season of Pride events to the Northern Hemisphere that kicked off with the late May recognition of what would have been Harvey Milk's 90th birthday. The month got off to a different start at one California school board meeting. A debate over banning a queer-positive social studies book included one member's slanderous reference to Milk as a pedophile. So we'll fill the education gap with this look back at the man who urged every queer person to come out. Not long after the first openly gay elected official in the U.S. became a San Francisco County supervisor in January of 1978, he had a conversation with This Way Out's Greg Gordon.
He's my rebel in a no-no-no. He's my rebel in a no-no-no. To me.
I'm Harvey Milk. I'm a supervisor in San Francisco.
And I'm Greg Gordon.
I'm gay.
And so am I. And we're up in San Francisco in Harvey's office at Castro Camera. And Harvey's graciously taken a few minutes out of his very busy schedule to talk to us about politics in San Francisco and how he got elected, the first openly gay person to be elected to public office in California history.
I like to also talk about the politics in California rather than San Francisco.
That's fine.
Because I don't think there's a delineation.
You don't think that there's a difference in politics in San Francisco as opposed to, let's say, politics in Los Angeles?
It's a matter of degree. There's no moat built around the city of San Francisco that separates us from the rest. Sometimes we wish there were. but I think what takes place in San Francisco, for whatever reasons, can take place any place. It's just a matter of understanding what it's all about. And San Francisco, it's very interesting because of the fact that I'm gay, that becomes the big media event that sells the newspapers. But it's very important that we realize that I was elected as a candidate who was gay rather than a gay candidate. Didn't run on a gay issue. And it's vital to know that it took 4 years, 5 years, or whatever it was, to build up that kind of a reputation.
Because you had run for office in the past.
It had nothing to do with running for office. The reason I ran for office is because I was issue-oriented. In my particular district, we've had about 5 or 6 major district battles versus citywide problems. In every one, I was involved in them, on one side or the other. There wasn't one other candidate. There were 17 people running in this district. There wasn't one other candidate who had been involved in every single district problem. I was there. People on the streets would say to me, Harvey, I don't agree with your issue, but I know you're a fighter. I know you're there. I know you will be there when we need you. If you add the gay community with the other traditional minorities, we should have control of the state. But we cannot sit in the back of the bus and let the other minorities lead. We should show the leadership.
What can you say to these people who don't want to get involved, who don't want to register, who feel like voting and the whole establishment political process is a waste of time and not the way to do it?
Because the establishment political process stinks. I, too, would prefer to throw a bomb, except the establishment has more bombs than I have. 4 years ago, three of gay socialists came in who I know, and we had a nice long talk, and they talked about how bad the system was and that the system had to be overthrown. Then we got talking about police brutality and harassment. And I said after a while, what if you were the three police commissioners and I was the chief of police? And they said, great. I said, I thought the system stinks. It's not the system that stinks. It's the people who are running the system stinks. You have two ways of changing the system, revolution or getting in and bending it from within. Unfortunately, revolution will not work. I mean, it ain't going to happen. As long as there's two cars in every garage and a drop of gasoline and a TV set and you can wash your glasses and not get spots on it, the revolution is not going to exist because people are afraid of the unknown. And so they rather have the awful conditions that exist rather than the unknown. The revolution will not be televised. But rapid evolution can take place already on the Board of San Francisco Supervisors in 6 weeks. Things that were never discussed before have been discussed. The dialogue has been opened, which was never there before, and we won a lot of the votes. So what is revolution, you know? It's not what I like to see. But we are going to have a rapid evolution. We've already had it in San Francisco. Just stop and think. The day the Board of Supervisors in San Francisco was sworn in, the tradition is every supervisor gets up and says a few general words and introduces their family there. And the first words out of my mouth, and the national press was there, was, as you know, I am gay. And I said that there's a state law that says gay people cannot legally be married. But there is no state law or law any place in the universe that says two people cannot love each other. And I like to introduce my lover. And if that's not a revolution, I don't know what is. Sure, it's not what we want. But, you know, we're battling thousands of years of prejudice and thousands of years of a system. It's got to change. It's not going to be easy. And there's got to be a lot more Harvey Milks. There's just got to be. There's too many young kids in little towns in Minnesota.
As president of the Board of Supervisors, it's my duty to make this announcement. Both Mayor Moscone and Supervisor Harvey Milk have been shot and killed. The suspect is Supervisor Dan White.
The November 1978 Milk Moscone assassination tore San Francisco apart. Former Supervisor Dan White was convicted of the lesser charge of manslaughter based on a diminished capacity defense. His sentence only amounted to 5 years in prison. When the verdict was announced on May 21, 1979, the queer community in the Castro district erupted in the White Night riots.
Not since the late 1960s has the United States seen such a violent expression of its people's anger and frustration as was seen Monday night in San Francisco.
How are you feeling about what's happening now?
Increasingly angry, increasingly scared, very deeply hurt.
Lesbian feminist activist Sally Gerhart.
Very much ashamed of a system that I put not much faith in, but at least a little bit of faith in sometimes, that, you know, a jury of 12 good people and true could come in with something so obvious as this with a proper verdict, and I'm enraged that it hasn't happened. And what I think is happening all over this country is that we are getting more and more military-minded. There is a huge right-wing backlash. I think people are beginning to want to put people more into boxes. They can't stand any differences. And the reason that Dan White shot Harvey Milk and George Moscone as well was because they were both supporters of gay people, Harvey being gay and Moscone being a supporter of gay people. And our connection now, I think, is with a broad-based questioning of a system that would have us all put in boxes, would like to have us all be just one way, color-coded into the proper sex role, and particularly have our men be in that masculine mindset, that masculine code that's going to make killers of them all. And it's the women who have been suffering the most from this all these years. Now it's becoming gay people who are suffering from that. I say that the whole nation is suffering from that. It's very scary, that verdict. Very scary.
I think today is a really terrible day for the gay people of San Francisco.
Former aide to Supervisor Milk, Cleve Jones.
And I'd like to see us move down to 18th Street and get the people out of the bars and into the streets. So hit it! Out of the bars, into the streets! Out of the bars, into the streets!
I think those jurors ought to be tried. If it was me, if I was, have been, I have a lot of frustrations too. I can't find a job. But I went around there and shot up a couple of people just to do something like, because I was angry at them. You think they'd let me out of there? I'd be in there till doomsday if I didn't meet the chair first. And you tell them, whoever they are, I hope they have nice, long, sleepless nights forever.
He got away with murder! He got away with murder!
I don't think it's wrong for us to feel like we do. I think we should feel like it more often.
Yeah!
Police have arrived at City Hall, at the doors of City Hall. They've got riot squad gear on. There's pushing and shoving going on. It has now broken loose. Cops are now bashing heads. The people who had been protecting City Hall are now getting dragged away by police. The police are now moving out into the crowd. Moving out into the crowd and just flailing about.
Running back. The police have literally beaten the crowd.
The police moved into a group of people who were sitting down and not moving. And just clubbed away. And now pretty much there's a 15-foot distance between us and the line of police who are coming down. You can hear their voices. And here they are.
Later that evening, the police entered the Castro in large numbers, causing the people to come out of the bars, screaming, "Get out of our neighborhood."
Go home! Go home! Go home! Go home!
I was just down here at 1 o'clock having a drink, and I decided to go home. And I go out, and I noticed there are half a dozen cops standing in the middle of the intersection out there. And all of a sudden, there are, you know, more cops everywhere, and they start lining the streets, and a few people started throwing bottles at them, and then they just go crazy. They chase people back into the bar where we thought we were safe, and then they just come storming through here. You know, it's... It's like Nazi stormtroopers.
We were sitting at the same table. Honey, come over here. We were all sitting at the same table, relaxed, having a cocktail I just ordered around. The police bashed through every one of these windows, billy clubbing. Everybody through that small little back door in the rear, saying, "Get out, go home, queers, get off the street."
This woman cop comes up to me and kicks me in the ribs, telling me to get your f***ing ass out. That's what she said.
A big woman police. They were billy clubbing people all the way out through the back door, and there was no way all these people could get through that tiny back door. They
before
came
even,
in,
before,
tipping tables over, crushing people on the floors, billy clubbing, trampling
people
over
came
people,
in,
saying,
people
"Get the hell out! Get out!
Once,
go home, faggot!"
Once they came in,
the
there was no stopping them. I was hit in the chest by billy
when
club.
When they finally got us out
friends
the back door,
hit in the back,
they
the
got into formation and marched, saying, "Go home, faggots! Go home, faggots!"
This guy was saying that this was an anti-faggot decision. I think it's just the way the American system of justice fucks up all the time. You know, you try to run innocent people into the ground and guilty people get off scot-free.
Tuesday night, the tone was remarkably different on Castro Street. The long-planned celebration to commemorate Harvey Milk's birthday came off as planned, without violence.
Introducing Harry Britt.
Britt was appointed to fill Milk's seat on the Board of Supervisors.
Tonight, 15,000 people have gathered to demonstrate with their love that the spirit of Harvey Milk will always be alive in our city. And I sure as hell don't have to tell you that Harvey Milk's people do not have a damn thing to apologize to anybody for ever. Yesterday was a tough one. But as I've talked to so many of you today and received so many wonderful calls from you and from gay people and from non-gay people all over the United States, it seems to me that somehow we turned a corner yesterday, and that if Harvey Milk is listening somewhere, he knows that the gay movement has moved forward a great step because of what happened yesterday. Let no one believe that the step that we have taken is a step from nonviolence to violence. We have suffered too much at the hands of violent people ever to go down that road. But let us say that never again will our people ever stand by and let Dan White's people rule the day. Let us say with our new strength that we are tired of dealing with pigs and that from now on, the people who would follow the spirit of Dan White are going to have to deal with us.
I'd like now for you to welcome Meg Christian and Holly Neer.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Harvey. Happy birthday to you.
The time has come from all over this country to people to say, no more dreaming. The time has come to awake.
Thanks for finding This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. News Wrap was reported this week by Joe Bainline and Ava Davis and produced by Brian DeShazer. Our Harvey Milk Remembrance was produced by Greg Gordon, Lucia Chappelle, and Brian DeShazer. Thanks also to Democracy Now! Pink Floyd, Pepper Maché, the San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus, Buena Vista, the Birds, and the Tom Robinson Band performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation and Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley. Listener donors make this program possible. Thanks also to the Los Angeles cannabis providers MMD Shops for being a This Way Out Pride partner. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email us at info@thiswayout.org or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappelle. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org or wherever you get your podcasts. And on WGDR Plainfield, Vermont, KYRS Medical Lake Spokane, Washington, CJLY New Denver, British Columbia, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay tuned, y'all.